Inspiration, communication, critical thinking, creativity. This is AISD Tech Talk.
Hello and welcome to the second episode of AISD Tech Talk. My name is Brandon Carr and with me is soon-to-be Dr. Paul Munschauer.
Hello, hello.
And today we have the other members of our instructional technology, I always heard coaching. Are we coaches or we're specialists?
Whatever you want to call
us. We haven't decided yet. Okay. We have Lucille Fullen.
Hello, Brandon.
Hey. She's been, how many years?
10.
Woof. You've seen a lot. Okay. And we also have Paula Waddell.
Hello.
There she is. No need to adjust your radios. She sounds like that. Now, for the second episode, we are going to talk about the TCEA conference that we just went to in Austin, Texas. I think everybody had a pretty good time. Learned a lot.
The food was good.
Yeah, was very good. What was your favorite food, Paula?
There was too many. Too many to choose from.
Fair enough. That's true. That's true. It's a good point.
Yes.
Okay. So for those of you that don't know, TCEA, or the Texas Computer Education Association, is a global nonprofit member-based organization supporting the use of technology in education. Founded in 1980. Were you even born then, Paul?
No.
Oh, wow. TCEA has been playing a vital role in increasing technology funding and access for pre-K through 16. Pre-K through 16.
That includes
college. Got it. Schools for 37 years. Still.
That's longer than I've been alive.
That's right. They have a 17,000 member association. It's led by a grassroots board of directors, all of whom are professional educators. And TCEA's offerings all support educators in the field who are enhancing curriculum with digital tools. So there you go. Now you know what TCEA is. And every year they have this massive conference in Austin. How many years have you gone, Lucille?
I've probably gone 16 to 18 times, so 16 to 18 years.
And it's been in Austin every year?
Every year.
But this year was the last year to be in Austin, so if you guys didn't go, you missed out.
Missing out.
That's right. Were you glad you got to go this year, Paula?
Certainly. It's my last.
Was it bittersweet?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah? Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
I did.
Good memories to have forever.
Since 1993.
93?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
My first one.
What was it like? Well, I mean, obviously it's
kind of like it was this year, everybody waiting in line.
Okay. But I guess it was also too, it was smaller, I guess. It wasn't.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was smaller.
So we're going to try to do kind of a recap of what we walked away with, what piqued our interests. And we also have a couple interviews that we did with some folks. And so we'll check those out. So let's go ahead and get started. Paul, what was one of your biggest takeaways from this year's conference? This is your first year to go?
Yes, I was a rookie. My biggest takeaway was probably the potential impact of immersive technology. Okay. Virtual reality, augmented reality, the mixed blended reality, and just not just on how it's going to affect student motivation and engagement, mm-hmm. but actually teaching the content, especially those abstract and complex concepts that you're trying to teach,
right.
Really hard to draw that on the board. It's really hard for kids to understand it from a two-dimensional picture in a textbook that they can't manipulate or move or anything like that.
Right.
So just the really, really cool things that it has to offer for kids to handle these things,
mm-hmm.
and just immerse themselves in that technology and the content.
Did you guys see any AR, VR stuff this year?
Oh, yeah. I went to a mm-hmm. couple of sessions.
Several.
Yeah. It's kind of been creeping every year. It gets a little bit bigger and bigger and bigger, and it seems to be taking over, I guess.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be taking over, I suppose.
Well, I helped one of the biology teachers at Abilene High write a grant for the Abilene Education Foundation, and we have two Ocular Rift headsets that we're going to use teaching the human body.
Cool. Paula, what were some of your biggest... Or what things piqued your interest the most on your final farewell tour?
Well, of course, they had a lot of Chromebook sessions this year. And one of them that I went to was if you give a kindergartner a Chromebook. And I was really impressed on how the teacher from Waco ISD took those Chromebooks and her team embraced them enough to learn different things to teach the kindergartners how to use them. They used Screencastify, in which the students could record themselves mm-hmm. doing different things or working with math or whatever subject. Also shared to the classroom where she could actually push things out to the kiddos, you know, where they could all see what she was talking about at the same time and work with that. The fact that she took that and her team took that and actually taught the kindergartners how, and that impressed me in the fact that they didn't say, oh, they can't do that, they're mm-hmm. too young. You know, they took that and embraced it and thought, why not a kindergartner?
So have you seen that over the years? Like, it seems the technology is starting earlier and earlier and earlier.
Yes. And it was mentioned not in this particular class, but that the kiddos are getting technology earlier, but it's the social technology. It's, you know, the iPhones and
okay.
whatever. But they're taking that and teaching them the academic side of mm-hmm. of the technology, which is what they need to do. And if they're going to learn it at an early age, they might as well learn it correctly.
Right.
And start at the bottom and go mm-hmm. up instead of wait till they're middle school kids and start there.
Throw a device in their hand.
Right.
So, do you think the impact of the Chromebook is going to be because of what it can do or because of its affordability and how we can easily get access to it for the kids?
Well, I think both. I mean, it's affordable in order to get one in every student's hands, but yet they can also teach them those productivity tools, you know, spreadsheets and Word documents and PowerPoints, and whatever they need to learn.
Well, and I think Paula kind of hit on that with these kids are getting these devices, but when they hit middle school and high school, they don't know how to use them. It's not playtime. It's the teachers expect them to know certain skills mm-hmm. in order to use their time wisely in class, and they don't get those actual technical skills. And so while we're trying to focus on technology integration and it not being a separate component in the classroom, they also have to get those skills that are going to help them with their classwork later in their later years in school.
Right. It seemed like there was a big push that I noticed, a big push towards digital citizenship, which, you know, we've all heard that, you know, for, you know, forever, but approaching it to where it's, you know, a year round constantly being, you know, kids remind and taught because they don't know how to function online for the most part or how to function with a device in a productive way, and having to teach them and create that culture.
Well, they're brave. They're brave because if they don't see a person, they can make an ugly comment or on social media. But when they're across from them, they're less likely to say that. I did go to a session on digital citizenship, and one of the things that hit me that stood out was the presenter said, you know, it's not about being a good digital citizen. It's about being a good citizen, period. Mm-hmm. Because the things that you don't expect kids to do online, like harassing or bullying or yelling or what, mm-hmm. you wouldn't do that in person face-to-face either. And we're teaching them to be kind in face-to-face, in person. So why wouldn't they automatically be kind online? And so it's not if you're teaching those digital citizenship skills, that's just also just being a good citizen, period.
Right. That's kind of what there was. I went to a few different talks, and they were saying kind of the same thing. It shouldn't be digital citizenship. It should just be citizenship, you know, because as districts go more one-to-one and textbooks are going totally digital, it's not like your citizenship and your digital citizenship are two separate things. It's just a part of the culture.
Right. It should be integrated. It shouldn't be just like you started out saying, it taught at the beginning of the year and then forgotten about. Mm-hmm. It should be integrated all year
throughout the year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Constantly brought back into the lessons and what's the word
they use? Not just in the lab, but also in the library and in the classroom. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. school-wide.
Oh, totally. I mean, if every teacher, if the district goes one-to-one, if every teacher has a card of something in their room, you know, it's going to have to be an ongoing thing. And that probably would be good what you're saying with the kindergarten kids is to start them young, so that way when they get to those higher grades, they're already familiar with the new culture.
Right. Well, and I think that resonated with me the most is because I keep hearing, well, they're too young. They can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need a different type device, or, you know, but what I watched in that session was amazing. So our kindergartners can do it. They just have to be given the tools and the freedom, you mm-hmm. know, to learn it and let them.
Well, I mean, that was a big deal this year when our sign-in policy changed, and so every kid has to log in with their unique ID.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it kind of rolled out, not in the most perfect way. It was during the middle of the school year, and it just kind of had to happen. But it was crazy there for a minute, but they're able to do it. I mean, they have to put things in place, but...
Well, and whoever, the teacher, the lab manager, the librarian, whoever is teaching those kids, if there's an expectation set that, yes, you can do it, and yes, we're going to do this, and we're going to practice this, they have it down. They have it down. They can do it.
Yeah. All right, so Lucille, what was one of your biggest takeaways from this year's TCEA conference?
Well, just like you said, there's tons of presentations to go to and thousands of participants, and... I guess just working with teachers in our district, they often feel overwhelmed because we give them so many resources.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that way in content, it's that way in technology. They're overwhelmed with all the resources. Well, you know, when Kimberly came in this year and she charged us with choosing five apps or software programs that we felt like we needed to push from a district level, we were like five.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I heard. That was one of the things I heard, is we have got to limit what the district expects our teachers to really be good at, and not just a bunch of surface apps.
Right.
I mean, offer a toolbox for them if they want to get out and explore on their own. But these are the things that we're going to help support, and we're going to help make it good use in the classroom.
Right.
And so I heard that several times in several presentations, that the things that districts have learned as they've either gone one-to-one or they've implemented digital coaches in their schools or their districts. But Abilene has chosen five.
Mm-hmm.
And within that five, I'll save the big one for last, but we have Who Knew It. And then we have Classflow, Plickers, Kahoot, and then Google Apps for Education. And we all agree that Google Apps for Education is
endless. That could be its own. Yeah.
You could just push that. So we feel like that's enough, not to overwhelm our teachers,
mm-hmm.
so that they have something to choose from. And yes, you know, that may not fit the bill for everybody, but at least it's a start, and we're not expecting them to – we're not throwing 300 apps at them, or a Symbaloo page that has all hundreds of bookmarks at them. So
it just becomes background noise.
Hopefully they won't be so overwhelmed. That was one thing. But with that same concept, I think, Paula, you'll have to remind me, I think we went to a session from Brazosport, and I was very impressed with the way their instructional technology specialists go into classrooms and their look fors with a teacher. First of all, they're not evaluators. They are not considered administrators over the teachers at all. And that lessens the pressure with teachers.
Sure.
But they have a model that they've used that they don't, not that Sammer or Lodi, not mm-hmm. that those models aren't good, but they've decided what's going to best help their teachers is if they help them with their T-test evaluation.
Right.
And so they just kind of have a rubric that they use going into the classroom and identifying just the technology part of T-tests. And they either mark the teacher as beginning, demonstrating, initiating, and emerging, which is part of T-test, but they've gotten these written rules. And so it's real easy for the instructional technologist to go in and say, oh, well, you're not quite there because I mm-hmm. didn't see this in this particular lesson. It's interesting because some everybody kind of has a different philosophy on coaching strategies. And some people will say, oh, I can walk in and tell what's going on in a classroom in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You don't always see everything in 5 minutes.
Right.
Just like the same exact thing is not going to happen every single day. And I think that's a big frustration with teachers, because I was at a middle school campus, one of our middle school campuses this week, and a very good teacher. She's a very good teacher, and she's very willing, and she's mm-hmm. one of those that goes above and beyond. But she said to me, she said, Lucille, we're expected to be perfect. When someone comes into our classroom, we're supposed to be on point all mm-hmm. the time with our content and with our classroom management and with technology. And she kind of threw out there, you know, with reading minds, you know, we're supposed to be perfect all the time. And we're not, we're people,
mm-hmm.
but we're being evaluated like we're supposed to be perfect. And that's the last thing I believe the Abilene team wants as we try to emphasize technology in our district.
Yeah.
And we don't want to overwhelm the teachers in that capacity at all. We don't want them to feel at all like we're trying to catch them not like doing
gotcha well. Stuff. In the first year, they talked about they spent building relationships with the teachers,
right?
And just to that point where when they saw them coming, they didn't dread it,
right?
You know, and like they were being evaluated or scored or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's a big piece right there.
Is the rubric that they put together simple and to the point? I mean, it's got to be.
It's
because I've seen some, and it might as well be a full teacher evaluation. I mean, it's so much information.
Yeah, it pretty much comes from T-test.
Okay, so, mm-hmm. well, that's okay. That's good, because I guess that's what they'll be evaluated on anyway.
And with that being said, kind of going back to what Lucille was saying, when the teachers are scared because they feel like they have to be perfect, they're not going to branch out and try new things.
Right.
Because they feel like if they try something new, technology-based, and it's a flop, they're going to be marked bad
right.
on an evaluation. Instead of having a peer come in and say, hey, that was good effort, you know, how could we do that a little different?
Yeah.
If they felt more comfortable and safe, they would be a lot more willing to branch out and try things.
And I guess that's the big fear is, because, I mean, I remember being in the classroom, you don't want to, you know, everything to... You want everything to work, but with going one-to-one, if we're going to have technology in the classroom, you have to be willing to take those risks and try new things.
You have to say, well, I've learned just being in the classroom that you just tell them, look, we're trying something new today, and, you know, we're all going to help each other out and learn about mm-hmm. it. You know, if you know something and I don't, hey, that's great. We'll just share it with everybody.
Do you know where Bonner Springs High School is? Never heard of it either. I didn't know either, but I did go to a session. And piggybacking on what Paul said, they said that they focus on people. They don't focus on the technology.
Mm-hmm.
They focus on building relationships,
mm-hmm.
Building trust, promoting that risk-taking environment
mm-hmm.
and being visible or available,
right.
knowing that, I mean, we aren't on the campus. We aren't assigned to the campus. We all have a handful of campuses that we are assigned to, so we can't be at all of our 6 campuses every day. But building a relationship with those teachers so that they know they can call on us anytime.
Now, I know there's obviously districts of different sizes, but did you notice how different districts lay out teams like ours? Did it seem like most of them had someone on a campus?
The smaller districts especially mm-hmm. have, it seemed
two
like,
to three people.
Well, it seems like especially if they're, you know, below 6,000, they're really equipped with their instructional coaches or their instructional technology specialist. But the bigger the districts got, it is tougher mm-hmm. and it doesn't afford that. The districts, and I can't remember, I think we may have gone to the same session, and I don't want to say the district's name, but it seemed like when they rolled out a one-to-one initiative, they did not equip, especially the high school campuses that mm-hmm. have, you know, 3,000 kids.
Right.
They did not place a technician, especially, on that campus, and that was one of the things they would have changed in hindsight,
is right.
knowing that you're pushing this out, especially in this first year, making sure a technician was assigned to the campus or officed at the campus.
Right.
And with us considering going one-to-one, our school board is wanting to go one-to-one, and we won't do it district-wide, but we will choose a few grade levels sure. and try to deploy it, and then every year probably try to add to it. So just thinking about which campuses or which grade levels or which content, I don't know how they're going to deploy right. it, but just learning from some of these other school districts and what they wish they had done, or how they've turned, you know, done a 180 on how they originally decided to push this out.
Yeah. And there seemed to be a big, or at least I picked up on it this year, there's a big push for kids to be using technology, but not just for technology's sake, you know, using it to create something or have a new experience. And kind of like what you were saying, you know, focusing on the people and not the technology, especially in that one blended learning session that we went to, a whole lot of focus on the kid and the learning that's going on or that could be going on, as opposed to, you know, I'll make sure you stick a device in their hand. And, you know, sometimes technology isn't appropriate for everything. And I'd kind of like the idea of the different, you know, stations mm-hmm. where they would get
rotate,
up and
yeah.
do different things instead of being, you know, with the computer the whole time.
Well, and the other thing that technology can do for you is you can almost make an individual education plan for every kid so that they take charge of their own learning and they can get depth in the content that they wouldn't get from direct instruction. Think about it this way. If we sat down and had a conversation and I asked you to recite your ABCs for 30 minutes, how irritating would that be to you?
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we do that to our kids when we're in there doing a direct instruction and they already know the content. It's
right.
like making them say their ABCs for 30 minutes. I mean, technology will allow us to free up the curriculum some where they can actually look for things that interest them.
Yeah. I did like, I went to a session on HyperDocs. I didn't really, at first I was like, it's just a Google Doc with some links in it. But no, I was wrong. There's a whole theory and concept behind it. And I think it's pretty cool. And kind of like when we were talking about, you know, how we just have the five apps. The last few years going to TCEA, it's really easy to go to, like, you know, these cool sessions with the latest and greatest thing or some new MakerBot or some, you know, and those are tons of fun and they're super cool. But this year, knowing that our district is looking at one-to-one, I was really focusing on how can I figure out a way to benefit that fourth grade English teacher that's never had a device in her classroom, and now she's going to, you know, be given he or she's going to be given a card of something. What can we do to get them to integrate it somehow? And so that's kind of what I was looking at, and that's what I love about all the Google products is that you can do that. Like, hey, now, you know, start once a week. Go and, you know, log into your Google account, check out the HyperDoc, go through the steps, and experience that content, and then that frees you up to do one-on-one stuff with the kids that need that one-on-one time. So that kind of changed the way I approached the conference this year. I didn't always go to the most exciting or coolest things. I just try to go, like, what's the most practical thing that I can find or learn about to help people slowly integrate technology that have never touched it before? So I felt really good about myself.
Well, all right, on the count of three, we'll give Brandon a clap. One, two, three.
No, two. Ooh. Thanks.
So now we're going to share with y'all some of the interviews that we did during TCEA. We found interesting people that gave presentations or maybe commented in a presentation that we felt had an impact. So the first person is Brad Wade from Detroit, Michigan. He did a presentation on augmented reality. Really caught my interest and how that can be integrated throughout all the content. So we're going to go ahead and share that with you now. So this is Paul. I'm at TCEA's Convention and Exposition, and I'm here with Brad Wade.
Yep.
And where are you from?
I'm from Michigan, Detroit, Michigan.
Okay. So could you share with us what tech tool has had the biggest impact on students this past year?
Oh, the biggest tech tool. I would probably,
Gosh, I just say, I think, you know, with the immersion of all the emerging technology and augmented reality, virtual reality, I think virtual reality has captured the mindset of everybody, but augmented reality is what is actually getting to the masses faster, because you can get an augmented reality experience to the masses in minutes. And so I'd say it's that technology was the biggest thing, other than the biggest software would be Seesaw as an application, I would say, is one of the best tools for every teacher in education.
Okay. So with that being said, what new technology or application of technology do you see coming on the horizon?
Virtual reality and mixed reality experiences, virtual reality having multiple users at the same time, because right now virtual reality is one user, but they're experimenting with multiple users having experience at the same time. So I think multi-user virtual reality is going to be one of the coolest things that's going to come out in the near future.
And how do you see these technologies motivating or engaging students in new ways?
So the cool thing about using this emerging tech is we've seen the research shows it's engaging parts of the brains that has not it's typically dormant in learning. And so what's happening is students are learning quicker, more efficiently, and their retention is longer. And by using this and tapping into it, they're engaged at a higher level, because we know with engagement, we can teach them more. Because if we get that hook, we can lead them down the road to learning awesome stuff.
What is the best way to ease teachers' anxiety towards integrating these technologies?
That's always a great question. I'd say just pick one thing first, and then, you know, you'll be at a session or talk to a neighbor teacher and find just one thing and then get familiar with it. And once you're, you know, decide on what tool or application you're going to use, ask your students to play and learn it with you, because you don't have to be the expert. You can have students learn with you because they're great at it and they're a lot more comfortable than we are. So reach out to your students, say, hey, I've heard about this. Let's learn it together. And they're usually good to help you.
And last, personally, what is your favorite way to integrate technology into the classroom?
Mine is definitely augmented reality and virtual reality. Augmented reality, number one, because there's so many amazing apps out there, and everything in space, engineering, education, language arts, social studies, you name it. It's incredible.
Perfect. Well, thanks for sharing with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
I think as we listen to some of these interviews, we're going to see a common thread. What was his content area? Was he like a science teacher or...
He was a social studies teacher when he was in the classroom. Mm-hmm. I believe he's been out of the classroom for, I think he said almost 10 years now.
Okay.
He went into the business side of virtual reality and augmented reality, working with a lot of companies.
Oh, okay.
You know, I visited the Digital Square. You know, Paula said the lines were long this year because you couldn't pre-register for classes
right.
anymore. And so I took advantage of the Digital Square, and there was a virtual reality presentation using Google Expeditions going on while I was kind of waiting for another session to start. And it's an awesome tool to be able to use in your classroom if you can get the funds for headsets, but that replaces field trips.
Right.
You know, because our funding becomes less and less and our kids get fewer experiences, and this is a perfect way to open up the world to them.
Do you agree, Paula?
Certainly.
Well,
no, I do. It's very interesting, and it does get the kids engaged, and it does take them to places that they wouldn't ordinarily get to go to.
Yeah.
So, and it makes it come alive.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and one of the things that kind of stood out to me, kind of like what Brandon was saying, I went in with that perspective of how can I take this and integrate it across the curriculum using virtual reality and Google Expeditions and things like that. Say in English class, you're going to read Beowulf. You can take them on an expedition in Britain, and they can actually see the setting of the book.
Right.
And it helps lay that context so that the story becomes even more real for those kids. You can do the same thing in history and science and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. So,
and when you make it become more real, they remember it.
Definitely.
So, and while they have those headsets on, I think you have, as a teacher, need to have purposeful questioning so that
right.
they're looking for those
particular
contextual.
Yeah,
it's got to be some kind of guidance.
Definitely.
All right, so I did an interview with Dr. Mary Alice Curran. She's big, big, big into digital citizenship and has a nonprofit that she heads up, and we'll put links to all this stuff in the show description. I caught her just as she was done giving a very good talk on holistic digital citizenship.
I'm here with Mary Alice Curran, Dr. Mary Alice Curran, fresh off her talk about holistic digital citizenship. And I got a few questions for you. What tech tool has had the biggest impact on students in the last year?
Oh, in the last year. You know, can I go back a little bit and say, when I first started on this journey, I was like, if there was only one thing that you do differently, start blogging. Have your students blog. But if I were to pick some tools that really change, I'm going to have to go with, like, creation tools like Buncee. Do you know Buncee as a digital storytelling tool? I'd go with Buncee. I'd go with Flipgrid. That's trying to amplify student voice. Those would probably be the two that really stick out, because it's about creation and that the students really are taking ownership about it.
What new technologies or applications for the classroom do you see emerging on the horizons?
Okay, this is immersive technology. This is the AR, VR. I just went to an AR scavenger hunt here. I have to talk about, for the Skype-a-thon, did you get to participate in the Skype-a-thon? Okay, that is mind-blowing anyways. Just keep that on your radar. But this year, I connected for the Skype-a-thon with 7 classrooms in Scotland. And it was with an author named David Gotcher, who's the author of SpyQuest. So SpyQuest is like, you are a spy, you are going on a mission. He writes books. It's kind of like Pokemon Go, but with digital literacy and the whole focus of these missions. 7 different classrooms, all online. We were all on a Skype call. And they were simultaneously going through 5 different missions. My son and I were online, and one of those missions, they had to, like, verify that they were, like, worthy spy agents, and because of our American accents, we were from the FBI, right? But I literally witnessed online the idea of what it means to be part of a team, working together, movement, critical thinking, and then digital literacy, because you cannot compete, like, you can't finish this mission without, like, reading digital literacy. And so I look at this SpyQuest as, like, and I get to experience it as the wave of the future. So you are reading a book, I don't even get AR, but, like, how it all works. Can't wrap my head around it. And you've got this app, and now I'm literally in the book. That's amazing. That's a game changer. That, to me, is digital citizenship of the future. And the more that we can tie it to empathy, and, like, that's it. That's it.
Well, I think you may have answered it, but the other question was, how can technology motivate or engage students?
Oh, I mean, to see them so actively involved. Because, like, well, the story that I told about doing the diorama in the shoebox during the session, how does that motivate anybody? That's doing the same thing the same way. I mean, this was really, I feel like once we get kids out of their seats too, and you're working as a team, and you've got to go and complete these, you've got them actively engaged, and you've got them moving. And
what is the best way to ease teacher anxiety towards tech integration in the classroom?
Okay, so I would say that my specialty happens to be with educators that are deathly afraid of change. And you just need to meet teachers where they are at and not go to the 10th level, you know? And so if we were starting things, let's just say blogging and about commenting, let's start with some sticky notes, right? And let's start to put those things up on chart papers and have those conversations about the power of, like, collaboration and student voice. If we just even start there, where the students really are allowed to have ownership in their learning, even though it's on paper, and then we just very gradually introduce some tools, and maybe it's just one tool. Like, and that's the tool that we're going to explore all year long. I also spoke about student help desks. I think that is something that should be implemented into every level, all school districts, so that adults know that this is a two-way learning street. And when we signed up for this profession, it's because we love kids, and that we love that this is a journey. Like, learning is a lifelong adventure. And what a great opportunity for all teachers, especially those that are really afraid, to say, okay, I don't know the answers, but I am willing to, like, demonstrate that learning is a lifelong adventure, and I'm going to learn with you. I'm not going to talk at you. I'm going to talk with you, and I'm going to learn with you. And a student help desk We can do this simultaneously.
Personally, for you, what's your favorite way to see technology integrated in a classroom?
My favorite way to see it, you know, is that it's just natural. It's embedded. Don't even focus on the tool. I feel like the tool gets way too much, you know, attention. And we're always promoting the tools. And it's really that personalized learning. And then this tool is the way that I can amplify your voice. So I'd actually flip the cart and really focus on the personalized learning. And then I find the tool that's going to best support whatever that might be.
Awesome. Thank you so very much.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Well, there you go. Another AR-VR.
I like the way she talked about taking the scared teacher.
Right.
And starting small and, like I mentioned earlier, letting the kids know, I don't know anything about this, but we're going to learn together and, you know.
See how it goes.
See how it goes.
Well, that's kind of what we were talking about, you know, just picking five apps or just picking one thing for someone to focus on. Don't throw the whole kitchen sink at them. But, yeah, AR, VR.
But I liked her her example of how to start them out as well, like with sticky notes and build up to blogging online.
Right.
You know, I never thought of that. So.
But her entire session was over digital citizenship.
Yeah. Mainly about digital citizenship and how we as educators can teach kids how to conduct themselves online. And then, of course, it went off into different areas of what it would allow them to do being, you know, online, using technology and becoming true digital citizens of the world.
You know, I didn't go to her session, but she did. She wrote a paper or something and showed it in your presentation, and it was part of TCEA's literature, but she talked about how digital citizenship can be, and she categorizes it as respect, educate, and protect.
Yeah.
Those are the three themes of digital citizenship. Respecting, including etiquette and access that you have, and then obeying laws, and then educating, literature, communication,
right,
that kind of thing, and then protecting their rights and responsibilities and security, health, wellness, you know, not the bullying. That's
right.
What we see in school a lot. So.
She made mention of that when she was talking about teaching the students how to blog, and then they would go over what the students had written and say, okay, now why wouldn't we post that? Or
right.
Why wouldn't we, you know, and that was a learning situation.
Teachable moment.
Teachable moment,
yeah.
Yes.
That was a good moment. Interesting moment. Thanks for bringing up that moment. All right, so the last interview.
Where did you see these people? Did you actually go hear them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just corner them afterwards when they're trying to get out.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, the last interview that we'll play is with Tammy Seneca, Dr. Tammy Seneca. She is in a school district in Louisiana. She and her team, her tech team, did a talk about their adventures in going one-to-one, and they used Chromebooks in their one-to-one deployment. So let's see what she has to say.
I'm here with Dr. Tammy Seneca, fresh off her presentation at TCEA this year on one-to-one implementation. Let's see. The first question will be, what tech tool has had the biggest impact on students this last year?
This last year, I would still have to say it's the Chromebook, just because we've changed the way we're teaching in the classroom, and we're using it as a tool to increase the rigor in the classroom. So hands down, the Chromebook, because it offers so much for our students.
What new technologies do you see emerging in the classroom that's going to change things in the near future?
Virtual reality, I think, is going to change things. Of course, we love Google Expeditions and that kind of stuff. Augmented reality is going to change things. And so it's just going to be able to knock the walls down in your classroom. So it's going to be able to get you, or take our kids places where they've never been able to go before.
How can technology motivate or engage students?
I think it just keeps them interested. I mean, we for so many years, we have had some form of technology. Then we bring them in the classroom and we say, nope. Let's teach the way we did in the 1900s with John Dewey. So I think what happens is the first thing is it piques their interest. Not only does it pique their interest, they also feel like they're more like a scholar, because sometimes they can help their teacher. So I think by changing that culture, that's the big thing. So I think that's what technology provides for us. It also provides that collaboration piece that is so important for the kids to kind of take their content and bring it to heart.
What is the best way to ease teacher anxiety when implementing technology in the classroom?
I think the easiest way to ease it is to give them something they can actually use. So in other words, just don't teach them how to use the actual device itself. Show them how to use it with their content, and that gives the buy-in for us. That's what worked for us, hands down, every time with any new piece of technology, because they then don't get, they're not scared, because they've actually done the lesson themselves. And then, of course, support's a big thing. You've got to have some backup, some job-embedded professional development, and I think that's what helps them. Also, they need to understand it's okay not to know everything. It's okay to ask that kid, how do you do this? Because sometimes it's the kid that's in the back that may be your slow learner that can help the teacher figure it out.
Personally, for you, mm-hmm. what is your favorite way to integrate technology in a classroom, or your favorite way to see technology integrated in a classroom?
I think my favorite way to see it is when it's seamless. And in other words, when you go in and you see these kids getting really excited about researching something because they're using a QR code to do it, or because they feel like they're going on some adventure to the Great Wall of China through the Google expedition. So I think it's, to me, when it's not about technology for technology's sake, when it's about the content and it's about giving them some kind of a meaningful connection to what they're learning about.
All right, three different people, AR, VR. It's coming, I guess. We got to get ready.
Well,
what are we going to do, Paul?
What's who going to do?
What are we going to do?
Well, me, I'm going to try to integrate it. Merge cubes, Oculus Rift, all that stuff. So if any of you teachers hearing this want to get into that VR, AR stuff, let me know. I've got stuff I can teach you.
Yeah, and you can be taught by the doctor himself, soon to be doctor.
Well, the other common thing that I noticed was they kept repeating that the teachers don't have to know everything.
Yeah.
Ask your students. I mean, you'll all learn together.
Don't be afraid to try new
stuff.
Don't
be afraid to try.
Don't be afraid to fail.
Just because you might not know everything about it, or even anything about it.
Right.
Your students will.
Lucille, what did you think?
Well, I think what I mean, I obviously heard, I agreed with most everything she said, if not everything she said, but it's about support.
Yeah.
We can't just throw devices at them or even, you know, give them the right tools and not follow up. We've got to follow up.
Well, and the one thing that I would elaborate on what she said is it's not a one and done support PD. It is
constant throughout the year.
One PD to get your interest mm-hmm. and give you the foundation, and then you have to support year-round.
Yeah.
Constantly giving them the support they need, and even challenging them to grow right outside of that comfort zone, as you put it, Brandon, that proximal zone of development.
Yes.
Brandon.
Thank you, McMurray. Money well spent.
You know, I think one of the things that might ease the minds of some of our teachers with, especially us talking about going one-to-one, is that all of these districts that we visited with or went to sessions on, they didn't do this in 2 or 3 or 5 years. I mean, this has been continual for them,
right.
And they've made mistakes, and they've gone back and redone it a different way, and hopefully we'll learn from some of their mistakes. I'm sure we'll make some of our own.
Sure.
But we're not going to expect them to be experts in a year or 2 years.
Right.
I mean, we've had technology for a long time, and with very little expectation. So hopefully with this one-to-one, there will be some expectations to be met, but it's not going to be so quickly that they can't grasp it.
Right. Now, Paul, you went to a talk on one-to-one implementation, and it was a California school.
Yes.
Talk about that for a minute.
Now I have to think back on his name. I think it was Dr. Daryl Adams, maybe. He was the superintendent of a school in California, the second poorest school in the country.
Wow.
And they went one-to-one. I think they were one of the first schools in the country to go one-to-one, and they did not use Chromebooks. They used Apple iPad. So kind of a different perspective,
right?
Because you guys had the other two on Chromebooks.
Yeah.
But he wanted it because, again, it creates learning opportunities for those kids where they're engaged. It wasn't about the tool. It was about the learning experiences that he could provide for those kids. And so they got the iPads. Kids loved it. But when those kids left the school, they were very, really, really poor.
Right.
They lost that access. So he got really innovative and one of the first people to create mobile hotspots on all their buses.
Mm-hmm.
They had routers installed on the buses. They had solar panels put on the buses. they parked the buses in the trailer park areas where all the kids lived because a lot of the bus drivers lived there too.
Right.
So they just took the buses, parked them there, and left them running so that the kids had 24-hour access on their devices.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering that too. I don't know what our district is going to decide, if they're going to let kids take these devices home or maybe just have some to check out. But we do have a lot of kids that don't have internet at home. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, how do we get them access so they can continue to work? And I know there's one district that they did the hotspots. Kids could check them out, but that got to be super expensive. And they actually just wound up erect a new one tower every year to broadcast the district Wi-Fi across the town. They said it's cheaper than trying to maintain a bunch of those mobile hotspots. I thought that was pretty wild.
Well, you know, and we went to, a couple of us went to a session, a one-to-one session with the district, just up the road a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they started their one-to-one where they actually let the kids have them and take them home. And of course, they talked about how research shows homework doesn't provide the learning experience
right.
that some kids really need. And so as far as damage and the cost of damage, I mean, they've decided that it's not beneficial to send them home. And obviously some kids need it for
right.
homework or textbook resources, and they have devices they check out for that. But so I don't know what Abilene might do either. I guess it depends on the homework load. And
yeah, I don't know. I just think like kids would, you know, forget to bring them to school, or
yeah.
my little brother did, you know, broke this whatever. And I don't know. It just seems like, yeah, there would just be too much room for things to go wrong.
Well, especially if you have a classroom set at school also,
right.
it's different.
But, that's true.
But we don't have that.
Yeah. Not yet.
It's interesting that y'all bring that up, though, because that Dr. Adams from California had the exact opposite perspective with those parents being in poor communities.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted the parents to have access, too. So they let the devices go home, and he encouraged the parents to use them for personal reasons, too.
Okay.
So, I mean, depending on how the admin wants to approach this and kind of the culture they want to create, whatever the vision is for the school board.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that we could do. It's just going to, I think we'll be limited
mainly
by creativity and
right.
maybe funding, because sometimes that stuff does get expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another big topic when I go to these one-to-one sessions is getting the parents and the community involved. And being very transparent. Well, that was very interesting, everyone. Good job. One big clap. Any closing remarks? Everybody good? We nailed it, covered everything. Everything's fine. We've got it all figured out. All right. So we will be back in, I don't know, a couple weeks?
Yeah.
For another podcast with a special guest.
We'll have a good one.
It's going to be good. So make sure you listen in. Thanks, Paula.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Lucille.
Thank you for hosting.
And thank you to everyone for listening. And we will catch you next time.